This podcast is powered by the Leading at the Top of Your Game development experience. If you would like to work with Karen and the shockingly different leadership team to up-level the leadership execution acumen within your organization, visit developingyourgame.com to find out more.
So in the hybrid model that we have, our authors are investing in the production of the books, but in exchange for that, they are holding on to those intellectual property rights. They own the books themselves, and they have more ability to then repurpose that content into other things like online learning modules or workshops or whatever they do to monetize their big ideas.
Welcome to the Lead at the Top of Your Game podcast, where we equipped you to more effectively lead your seat at any employer, business, or industry in which you choose to play. Each week, we help you sharpen your leadership acumen by cracking open the playbooks of dynamic leaders who are doing big things in their professional endeavors. And now your host, leadership tactics and organizational development expert, Karen Farrell Rhodes.
Welcome back, everyone, and thanks for joining another episode designed to help you better lead at the top of your game. Now, as you know, for season 3, each month we're featuring leaders who have interesting roles in a particular profession or industry. Today's episode is part of our special series featuring leaders navigating in the digital world. And on today's show, we're featuring an expert who helps authors use the advances in digital publishing to help them become thought leaders in their niche. We're proud to have Tanya Hall, who is the CEO of Greenleaf Book Group, one of the fastest growing hybrid book publishing and distribution firms in the country. Now, as an author myself, I was fascinated by Tanya's advice on how to best navigate some of the biggest misconceptions around birthing a book. And if I'm honest, I made a few of these mistakes myself that were on her list. But I'll definitely not make the same mistakes twice as I work on book number 2. So if writing a book in the next few years is on your to-do list, you will definitely not want to miss this episode. And also remember to stay tuned for just 2 minutes after the episode to listen to my closing segment called Karen's Take, where I share a tip on how to use insights from today's episode to further sharpen your leadership acumen. And now, enjoy the show. Hey there, superstars. Welcome to another episode of the Lead at the Top of Your Game podcast. We are so pleased to have on today's show Ms. Tanya Hall, CEO of the Greenleaf Book Group. And the Greenleaf Book Group is a hybrid book publishing firm that helps authors develop publishing strategies. And if they engage with Greenleaf, to leverage some of Greenleaf's great relationships that they have developed, working directly with retailers and wholesalers to develop one of the fastest growing distribution businesses in the industry. Their whole concept is so wonderful. And because many of you as leaders have either written a book or have dreams of writing a book, we thought, wow, what a great resource to bring onto the podcast to give you a sneak peek into what it all entails or how to take your next book, if you've already written one, to the next level. So welcome to the podcast, Tanya.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Oh, we're so honored to have you. And I have my notepad ready because I know me personally, even though I've written a book, I am not a be-all pro of it all. And I'm sure there's a lot that I don't know that you're going to be able to share insights with. But before we get started, if you don't mind, we'd love to share just a little bit about you personally with our audience. So just as much as you feel comfortable, can you give us a sneak peek into a bit of your personal life and passions?
Sure. I grew up in Southern California, but I've lived in the Austin area for the last 20 some odd years. I have 2 daughters who are, well, one just graduated college, so I'm very proud of her, University of Oregon. Yeah, she's my duck. That's right. Math major at the University of Oregon. And then my younger one is a sophomore at the Laguna College of Art and Design. So obviously my girls are very important to me. And I, since the girls have gone off to college, I have filled my house with dogs. I have 3 St. Bernards, a German Shepherd, and a lab. and a whole lot of dog hair in tumbleweeds across my floor at any given time.
Okay, I just need to high five you on that one, because although we only have one currently, I've had a St. Bernard and a German Shepherd in the heat of Georgia, right? Oh, so they shed a lot. So we had clumps of hair everywhere. And now we just have a Poppy on named Poppy. He's a friend to our audience listeners, because sometimes he does bark from underneath my desk. But he's a small dog, but we've historically had larger ones. So I totally get what you're going through.
I love them. I love my St. Bernards.
I do too. They're just so wonderful and lovable. They really are.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive right in. And what I would love for you to start with, Tanya, is just to explain to our listeners a little bit about what Greenleaf Book Group does, and what is the difference between hybrid and regular publishing?
Sure. So we are a publisher and a distributor, and that means that people come to us at all different stages. Sometimes I like to say people just have a sparkle in their eye. They know they want to write a book, or they don't have any idea how to get started, in which case we can come alongside and partner with them all the way through the entire process. And then other times people have a finished book and they maybe have tried to get some distribution themselves. They've hit a wall because of reasons we can get into if you want to, but it's really hard as an independent author or a self-published author to get retail distribution. So then they bring the book to us. Can you help us get it into Barnes and Noble and the airport stores and so forth? And if it's a fit for our sales channels and it's a good quality book, then we can just bring in as a distribution project. So most people are somewhere in the middle. They have a manuscript maybe, and they're considering their different publishing options. Now the hybrid model, as the name infers, it's a blend in between self-publishing and traditional publishing. So on the self-publishing side, you would, of course, be investing in the production of your book. You're like the general contractor and you have control, right? You're in the driver's seat and you're putting all the money into it. So you get all of the money on the back end as well. In a traditional publishing deal for your business listeners, that's more like venture capital. So they're putting money into it, but that means, of course, they're going to keep the lion's share on the back end too, because they're shouldering the risk. So you give up a little bit of creative control and you give up ownership of your intellectual property rights. So in the hybrid model that we have, our authors are investing in the production of the books, but in exchange for that, they are holding on to those intellectual property rights. They own the books themselves, and they have more ability to then repurpose that content into other things like online learning modules or workshops or whatever they do to monetize their big ideas. So it works really well for people who are speakers, consultants, or have a significant direct sales platform, as we say.
Gotcha. And is one going down one pathway more cost intensive for the author than another? And if so, why or why not?
It depends, I guess, on how you look at it. So in a traditional deal, you won't have to, you'll get an advance typically, or in some cases you don't get an advance, but at least you're not paying anything for the production of the books. But then you don't own the book. So if you are like a speaker where you want to give a copy to everyone in the audience, you'll have to buy them back from your publisher. And over time, you know, what would that cost? I don't know. It depends on the deal that you make and how much the book is and how many people you want to give it to, right? So it's kind of hard to say. In the hybrid model, in our business model, it's definitely more expensive than probably self-publishing, just because it's a bigger push. We have to printing is expensive. We have to print more books to get them out amongst the retail brick and mortar chains. And then there's usually a significant marketing push. So the book is usually supporting a brand or a business in addition to just the book sales themselves. And that's really, people call it a business card. I kind of hate that because it seems to sort of belittle what all the hard work that a book involves. But it is. It's something that is out there in the world, kind of extending your credibility and your visibility.
Fascinating. How has mobile readers, like your Kindles and, you know, there's tons of apps where you can read books, how has that impacted the hybrid publishing industry?
So That all kind of took off around 2008. Between 2008 and 2010, there was sort of the war of the readers, let's say, that Barnes & Noble had their Nook and Amazon with the Kindle, and then the iPad comes along and that's in the mix as well. So there's so I worked in television before I worked in book publishing, and what's really struck me about the media industry is people are so quick to want parts of it to die, right? Like when television comes out, the movies are dead. And then when cable comes out, all of it's dead. And in fact, none of it's dead. So it's just another format. And that was the case with ebooks as well. So they initially were plenty of reports about the skyrocketing growth. Well, it's because the numbers were small. So yeah, it's increasing 200% year over year, but that's because it's like a tiny
very little
compared to what print books are selling. So to answer your question more quantitatively, it's really leveled out. It did its growth spurt. And then in the past few years, it's actually taken a dip back down, pandemic notwithstanding. But it's about 10% right now. Digital ebooks are about 10% of the overall book sales market, the exception of romance. That's a much higher percentage because those are voracious readers.
Yes, I can imagine. But you know, you bring up a great point because I'm a voracious reader myself, not of romance novels, but just in general. And I was back in the day, I was reading how they said, oh, you know, the millennials and the Gen Zers, you know, are going to really only want, you know, online access to books. And that's so not true. Now, I'm old school because I'm older and I love to have a physical book, me personally. But then my daughter, who is a Gen Zer, she loves physical books as well. There's something she she'll tap on online, but very few. She loves to have the physical book. So I can understand why there's not there's a misconception about the market share.
Yeah. And I think with nonfiction books and business books in particular, people like to have them as sort of a display of what they believe in or what they've learned or right. It's almost like bragging rights. So what's on your bookshelf? I mean, you've got yours right behind
you.
So yeah, I think there's a couple of factors at play there. And also it's still stupidly difficult to gift ebooks. So often like if a corporation is buying bulk quantities of books, physical is just much easier.
It definitely is much easier to gift a physical book than, you know, an ebook. And I was going to share one thing about that and I forgot. But okay, well, let me move on since I can't remember really, really quick. So can you give us a little insight into the process if someone wants to work with a firm like yours? I mean, how should they prepare? What should they think about? What is the right way to prepare to get started so that they're not behind the eight ball once they get to you? Any tips on that?
I would say, yes, I would say reach out as early in the process as possible. You know, very often I see people who really want to polish it before they turn it over for someone else to be the judge of, right? And that's understandable. But the problem is that they spend so much time on it at that point, and they've been working in a vacuum, that then they get it to us and we kind of, this isn't happening all the time, but we look at it and say like, well, we've got to take a step back because something's not working. And now we have to rewrite a part of it or rearrange it or do some other type of heavy lifting that could have been avoided if we had in the beginning, let's say, taken a look at their outline to say, this flow mostly makes sense, but let's rearrange this part and this part. You're missing something here. There's too much here. So it's just more efficient if we can get involved early and help guide how the manuscript is being born, if you will. And in terms of actually working with Greenleaf, if people go to our website, greenleafbookgroup.com, there's a form there that they can fill out. And, you know, we're just wanting to understand people's goals and what kind of efforts they're going to put behind promoting it. And that's a huge part of the book's success, as you know. And then we're looking for great content and collaborative authors due to the nature of the business model and someone who understands it. They really got to get out there and hustle to help the book sell.
So for those individuals like myself who've already written a book, but they might want a boost in distribution and promotion, what does that piece look like?
Well, it depends on what your deal is like. So if you have a deal where your distribution rights are tied up exclusively with someone else, there's not a whole lot that we can do in terms of distribution. We might be able to do a couple of things on the marketing side that, mm-hmm. as long as they don't require us to be the vendor of record. So it gets a little tricky for people who say have maybe the book has been self-published. And like I described earlier, they've just kind of hit a wall and they're wondering, how do I further extend it into retail? That's often where we can come in and start a new push for the book and work with the author to develop sort of a second launch, if you will.
Yes. And what does that entail? I'm always trying to prepare our audience members for, you know, because it's going to be work, you know, so dedicating the time and intention and resources needed to be successful, because that's what they want their, you know, book to be. So what would that entail to, I guess, get information out there? And what time commitment would they need to make? Is it to be interviewed? Is it to just be on call to support you as you all put it out to your distribution network? I mean, what does that look like?
I will say the more, it's kind of up to the author, and the more involved they are, the better the results. And it can get frustrating because they all have jobs and they're and kids and life, right? So at some point, it really starts to sort of wear you out. So I always tell authors, like, pick the thing that you love to do. Whether that's if you want more articles out there that point back to your book and leave a digital footprint, as we like to say, online, do that. If you love doing these podcast interviews, do those. I think people get into trouble when they try to do a little bit of all of it and it just wears you out. But
and you don't know anything well, right? Because you're not focused on.
Yeah. And you start to kind of resent the whole process, and then you're not going to have a good product because that can come through. So I would say, yeah, just figure out the thing that you really like to do. And if there's other stuff that needs to be done, that's when you potentially can bring in a team to take care of those pieces for you. So you're not missing opportunities.
I love that. And other than royalties that you get from book sales, what other revenue type of possibilities are there out there for authors?
So I wrote a book called Ideas, Influence, and Income. And those are the three sections of the book. And the income section is everybody's favorite.
I wonder why.
Right. And it gets deep into all of those things. So most common you see speaking, a lot of our authors are people who either are speakers or they are aspiring to be professional speakers. And a book is almost a necessity in that case. It's really a legitimizer, and it's a good thing to have, basically, for many reasons as a speaker. Online learning modules, there's lots of really cool platforms online now where you can sort of have a white label service in the background and have a really nicely designed online learning series that's pulled from the content in your book, if you have the rights to do that. Some of my authors who are in, let's say, like sales training or other types of professional training have a train the trainer sort of business model where it's almost like franchising your framework or your thought leadership. And that doesn't lend itself to all types of content. But, you know, if you think about sales training, that makes a lot of sense. And they just get somebody indoctrinated in whatever their program is and send them out so that they can scale this type of business that they have. So there are many more. And I will point you to my book if you want to learn more about them. And I went to great lengths to make that section very actionable.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, well, listeners, we will definitely have links to Tanya's book, as well as a ton of other resources for you in the show notes, but definitely prioritize getting her book because she's been in this industry. She's felt so compelled to write a book about it. So it would be silly if you're interested in this area, writing a book or looking to increase your distribution and revenue, not to go and seek out an expert's advice on, you know, how to do it and how to go about it. So definitely do so. So Tanya, I'd like for you to tell us a little bit more about the Greenleaf's growth, because you all have been in this industry for quite some time. I think over 20 years, if I'm correct, if 26. I'm not mistaken.
26?
Oh my goodness, 26, which is huge for businesses to have that type of survivability. So can you, you know, share a bit about your, you know, the company's journey, and then what do you see on the horizon right now for Greenleaf?
Sure. Yeah, it's been fascinating, honestly. I've been there for 20 of the 26 years, and When I started, it was very much a startup, and I was on the distribution side of the business because we were just a distributor. Not that that's any small thing, but we were a distributor. And that meant that all we were doing was taking people's finished books and selling them. So it wasn't until a few years after I started that the light bulb went off, and we were like, why do we keep rejecting books and telling people your book cover's no good, go over here. You need editorial help, go over there, and then resubmit it. You know, people hate that, of course, but we're the ones selling into retail. So we are best equipped to close that loop. Like, we know what they want, and we're not closing that loop for them. We're missing an opportunity. So that's when the publishing side of the business really took off, when we brought in experts to take care of all of those different needs, editorial and design and marketing. So that really the business model is more like a distributor with publishing services. And that's the evolution of it.
Wow.
So that part of the business just took off exponentially year over year as people wanted to work with a partner who had direct inroads with the types of bookstore chains and the airports where they want their books to be seen, of course.
Absolutely.
And then over time, you know, part of growing the company, which I've always been heavily involved with, has been keeping an ear to the ground, not only with the industry and seeing things like, oh, there's a new print-on-demand technology that actually supports a whole imprint in our business, or ebooks, let's say. Like, some of it kind of gets forced upon you, right? Where, okay, yeah, we have to do that now. But also listening to our authors and hearing them say, gee, I wish you guys did this so that it was all under one roof, or I wish you did that. And that's how, for instance, one part of our business is basically an in-house branding agency, because we had authors say, you're telling me I should identify my audience succinctly to the point where I have personas for them and better differentiate my book. But that's branding stuff, and who does that? So we figured out how to do
it. Branding does.
Yes. And now we have branding people internally. So people, they appreciate that. They want the one-stop shop, and that's what we're always trying to deliver to them. And then the other thing that's been really key for our growth are some significant partnerships. So we have, for instance, the license to run the publishing imprint for Fast Company magazine. That's called Fast Company Press. And we have the same thing for Ink magazine, and that's called an Ink Original. So
amazing.
Those are, yeah, they're really powerful brands that we can bring to our authors. And then in turn, they get advertising support from those magazines. So obviously, you know, it's such an honor to be affiliated with them.
Wow, that's playing with the big boys. Congratulations on Greenleaf's growth. That is amazing. And I'm just curious, what is your thoughts or positions on audiobooks? Should authors think about recording a version of their book, or is that not as popular right now?
Audiobooks are the darling of our industry, because the publishing industry, people, like I said earlier, like to doomsday it, but it's super stable and it always has been. Audiobooks are the rising star because there's exponential growth there year over year, double digit growth. So more and more people are listening in their cars or have smart speakers in the home. It's just very easy nowadays to listen to an audiobook, and some people prefer it over reading, which is fine. Who cares, as long as they're consuming the content, right?
Right.
So the challenge that the industry has always had is that audiobooks are not inexpensive to produce well. I would highly recommend having a voice actor or professional narrator, and then you have to have it edited and mastered and so forth. So that being said, the return can be challenging because Audible it's an Amazon brand, and they are the market leader, and just the way they pay out.
They take a huge percentage.
Yeah. We call it digital dimes. So
yeah.
at the same time, you know, if we're going back to this book really being intended to extend your visibility and credibility and raise awareness of how you think or your company, then you'd be silly not to, because you're reaching an entirely new community of people who
are
consuming this type of content.
And if they really enjoy your book, I'm sure they're going to Google you or search you or get to your website, where you might have many other more lucrative offerings that they might take advantage of, or have their teams take advantage of, you know,
yes,
their leaders
exactly.
in a company. So I can definitely see that connection. What is one of the largest misconceptions about book publishing or hybrid publishing, either one, anything in the publishing industry? What's one of the biggest misconceptions by the general public out there?
I think one misconception, or at least one underestimation, is how hard it is to get the book out there into the world. The competition every year increases in the media space. And in all of media, we have the same challenge. We have an oversupply of content and an under demand because we're all competing for eyeballs, as we say. So I think authors can fall into this trap of what I call magical thinking, where you do the very hard work, and it is hard work, of writing the book. And when you finish, you sort of sit back and you think, okay, the universe rewards hard things. I just did this like really hard thing. So right. Now, universe, you do your thing. It's your turn.
It doesn't work like that, right?
No. And in fact, I'm sorry to say that the hard work is still ahead of you, because marketing it is just, you have to really be persistent and keep at it and have a lot of different avenues that you're using to try and reach these readers. So it's just because there's so much competition. There's thousands of books being published every day. And then pile on to that, you know, blogs and streaming TV and radio and everything else that, you know, people have a choice to use their time on. So you've really got to make the book special, and then you've got to work to get it out there.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Does Greenleaf support authors just in the US or globally?
Globally. And we have a growing number of international authors. We tend to prefer it if they have some sort of connection to the States, even if that just means that they come here to work with certain clients, so that for promotional reasons, so that they can actually take advantage of opportunities to get, you know, interviews or whatever while they're here in the States. But yeah, we do have a growing number of people who come to us specifically because they want to extend their footprint into the United States, and the book is a tool to do that.
That is awesome. Well, hey, our listeners come from all over the globe, so that is great to know. Just because you're not in the United States, everyone, you can definitely take advantage of Greenleaf services.
That's right.
Well, Tanya, you know that I wrote a book on leadership execution and what I like to call leadership in action for individuals. And it was based on a ton of research that we did on high performing leaders. And we love to always ask our guests which of the 7 tactics that we talk about really resonated for them. And you were so kind enough to share that leading with entrepreneurship jumped out for you. And for our newer listeners, if you're not aware, leading with entrepreneurship is all about finding ways to improve products, processes, or services, you know, based on your work environment, but finding ways to always improve them for the better. And so we're just curious, Tanya, why did leading with entrepreneurship really resonate for you?
I think entrepreneurship was the one that jumped out at me because that's what I've done, right? Throughout my time at Greenleaf, I've always been building new products or services or departments and divisions. And that's really how the company has grown and what led me to my position of leadership, because eventually after you've been involved with all of those things, you know the most about the company.
That's so true.
Yeah, I think it's something that's important for leaders to actually sort of formalize a program around. I think it's one thing to say we support that, but then to actually have a vehicle by which people can bring forward those ideas and improvements and thoughts on how to grow the business is very empowering.
It sure is. It sure is. And I'm just curious, Tanya, what does it take for you to lead at the top of your game? Because I know being a CEO of such a dynamic firm can be challenging, but also rewarding. So how do you stay on top of your game?
2 things. Number one, my work has purpose baked in, right? I feel sort of bad for people. Like if you're running a server farm and you're trying to connect purpose with your team, I could probably get there because I'm good at that kind of thing. But with bringing people's ideas into the world, it's easy. It's obvious. And I have so many wonderful people on my staff who are very passionate about supporting that. So that's a huge part of it. And I guess kind of in the same thought, My team is, I've learned over the years, can make or break me as a CEO and my performance. So I've, you know, really, I think, honed my skills at hiring and also dealing with certain, there's always people issues in every company.
Yeah.
So I think getting that right is definitely key to leading at the top of your game.
Oh, and I wanted to do a virtual high five with you on that one as well, because I know that in leading a firm of my own, having fantastic team members who bring strengths to the table that you may not even have yourself is imperative. Just having great talent, you know, that are passionate is very imperative to the organization's success. So definitely understand. Well, before we let you sneak out of here, Ms. Tanya, we're going to have, as I mentioned, all the links to your website information, your books, tons of resources for our audience listeners. But I'd love to give our guests an opportunity to give voice behind where to find them. So if you wouldn't mind sharing where the listeners can find you and what Greenleaf is up to.
Sure. So the Greenleaf website is www.greenleafbookgroup.com. And then there is a website for my book, which is ideasinfluenceandincome.com. And there are some resources there that are very valuable. And also on the Greenleaf website, if people are thinking about writing a book, or maybe like in your situation, they've written it and they're wondering what they can do to sort of re-jumpstart it, we have a learning center that we've been building for years. So there's so much good stuff in there. So if you have any questions about the industry or how to get started, the answer is certainly in the Learning Center on the Greenleaf website.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tanya, for the gift of your time and you sharing these invaluable tips with our audience members. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. And thank you too, listeners, for the gift of your time and attention and listening to this episode. As you all know, we only ask one thing from you. It's to like and subscribe to the podcast and just share with one friend, because by doing so, that helps to expand our reach and help us to help others to lead at the top of their game. Thanks so much and see you next week. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today with Tanya Hall, CEO of Greenleaf Book Group. Links to her bio, her entry into our leadership playbook, and additional resources can be found in the show notes, both on your favorite podcast platform of choice and on the web at leadyourgamepodcast.com. And now for Karen's take on today's topic of digital book publishing. Hybrid publishing can be a great option, no matter if you're writing book number one or book number five in your repertoire. Well, when you use hybrid publishing, you do carry much of the cost and financial risk. You also have an army of experts to professionalize, market, and distribute your book. And this is critical in order to quickly expand your reach outside of your own private network. And it's definitely going to be helpful if you want to get your book in the hands of your target audience as quickly as possible. You know, it's like hiring a contractor when you want to build a new house on a plot of land. You pay the contractor to oversee the design, construction, plumbing, electricity, and so on, because they have the context and the expertise that you lack or you don't have the bandwidth to acquire. But when it's done, you own a beautiful home. And while the contractor produced it and you paid him a fee, him or her a fee, they don't own it. You do. Now, the chief advantage of the hybrid publishing model for those who choose it seems to be control, because you have control over the timing, the rights, the outcome, and the product itself. And the chief barrier seems to be money, because it's not cheap, I'm going to be honest with you. And then if we're talking pros and cons, a second con might involve the dream of being traditionally published by a major publishing house and the fear that you won't be considered a real author. But, you know, here's the truth. If it's a good book, which it probably is, if you're writing it and you do your research and you're thinking about it appropriately, if it's a good book which is professionally produced, readers really don't care what imprint is on the spine. Very few of them do. I even saw a recent survey of over 750 people that were asked what makes readers give an unknown author a chance. And you know what? The word publisher was never mentioned, not once. So Karen's advice is to just focus on getting it professionally produced and know that not all presses that call themselves hybrid are equally professional with equal track records. So do your research, and I do encourage you to put Tanya on your short list, because believe you me, she knows her stuff and she has a ton of contacts if Greenleaf isn't ideal for you. So she could probably point you in the right direction. Well, that's all for today. You know, please remember to subscribe to the podcast and share the podcast with just one friend, because by doing so, you will empower them to also lead at the top of their game. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. And that's our show for today. Thank you for listening to the Lead at the Top of Your Game podcast, where we help you lead your seat at any employer, business, or industry in which you choose to play. You can check out the show notes, additional episodes, bonus resources, and also submit guest recommendations on our website at leadyourgamepodcast.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn by searching for the name Karen Rhodes, with Karen being spelled K-A-R-A-N. And if you like the show, the greatest gift you can give would be to subscribe and leave a rating on your podcast platform of choice. This podcast has been a production of Shockingly Different Leadership, a global consultancy which helps organizations execute their people, talent development, and organizational effectiveness initiatives on an on-demand project or contract basis. Huge thanks to our production and editing team for a job well done. Goodbye for now.